Welcome to Managing Myeloma. My name is Antonio Palumbo and I'm a physician working at the Myeloma Unit at the University of Torino, Italy. Today, I'm going to discuss a few issues related to the integrated proteasome plus second-generated IMiD-based regimen into relapsed refractory multiple myeloma. So how we can combine those two agents in the treatment of multiple myeloma. The first issue I'm going to explain is the new data coming from the combination of carfilzomib plus lenalidomide and dexamethasone. This study, called the ASPIRE study, was developed in a patient with 1 to 3 prior lines of therapy. So we are here talking about the first, second salvage regimen. And the schema has been used is the schema involving carfilzomib at the dose of 27 milligrams per square meter. Important to remember that this dose needs to be reduced at the dose of 20 milligrams per square meter, day 1 or 2, only at cycle 1. So we start at 20 and then we increase to 27, and this is the standard dose we have to use. The infusion is at day 1, 2, 8, 9, 15, and 16 of every 28 day cycles. And we combine this infusion that is done intravenous in around 10 minutes with lenalidomide at the dose of 25 milligrams per day, day 1 through day 21. So 3 weeks on, 1 week off. And this is combined with dexamethasone at the dose of 40 milligrams on day 1, 8, 15, and 22. So basically on a weekly basis. And we should also remember that we might reduce when it's not well tolerated the dose of dexamethasone from 40 milligrams to 20 milligrams, especially in subjects over the age of 75 years. In the next slide, we are going to see the results of this study, and the primary endpoint was progression-free survival, and this study show a remarkable median progression-free survival of 26 months compared to 17 months of the control arm who receive lenalidomide and dexamethasone only. So the addition of a third agent, and in this case a second generation proteasome inhibitor carfilzomib, did increase the median progression-free survival of approximately 9 months. This is quite important because with the current available regimens, we usually have a median progression-free survival of around 1 year. And this is the first time that adding a third agent, we were able to improve the median progression-free survival, basically from 1 year to 2 years. And as you can see here, the hazard ratio was 0.69 with a p-value of less than 0.0001. In the next slide, we highlight the progression-free survival by subgroups. And you can see that basically all the subgroups did show the benefit of the addition of this third agent. and you can see that the risk group by FISH, there is an equal improvement in both high risk and standard risk patient, as well as beta 2 microglobulin less or more than 2.5 prior. This is very important, the treatment with bortezomib, yes or no. This is implying that the previous treatment with bortezomib can be re-challenged by the use of carfilzomib, although numbers are not so important. Also, prior treatment with lenalidomide did show an improvement according to yes or no prior treatment with lenalidomide. And certainly the same for patient refractory to IMID in any prior regimen, yes or no, you can see that the data favors the use of carfilzomib in combination with lenalidomide and dexamethasone. In the next slide, we are also showing that there is an improvement in terms of progression-free survival, both in patients with high risk defined by FISH or standard risk always defined by FISH. And you can see that the median in the high risk population is 23 versus 13, and in the standard population, the median progression-free survival is 29 months versus 19. Basically highlighting that both in high-risk and standard-risk patients, there is a reduced risk of progression that is around 30%. In the next slide, we also saw something that is very important. And we, for the first time, could see a proportion of CR that is 30% in relapsed refractory patients. Usually, the standard CR rate is around 30% with combination including proteasome inhibitors, alkylating agent, or IMiDs in newly diagnosed patients. Now we have the opportunity to have the same proportion of CR rate in relapsed refractory patients with the use of carfilzomib in combination with lenalidomide and dexamethasone. Also for the VGPR rate, we are at 70% for the free drug combination versus 40% for the two drug combination. I would like to highlight also something that is important beside the difference in terms of CR or VGPR rate is that the action is absolutely quick with carfilzomib. The tumor reduction is probably the fastest that you can obtain currently with the different available agent. So especially when you see someone with a symptomatic disease where you need to get rid of tumor in a very quick way, certainly this is one of the best available regimen. In the next slide, we also highlight the progression-free survival according to the different response rate, and you can see that more CR you obtain, more profound cytoreduction you obtain, better is the median progression-free survival that is almost 3 years for patient achieving CR of stringent CR, and is around 30 months for patient who did achieve the VGPRA. This is important because, of course, if we are moving from 40 to 70% VGPR rate, you certainly increase the proportion of patients who might even reach a 3 years progression-free survival in a relapse setting. In the next slide, we also highlight the difference according to prior line of therapy, one versus two or more. And the difference is clearly very well maintained. And if you have only one prior line of therapy or two or more prior line of therapy, the hazard ratio is basically 0.7 in both groups. The median progression-free survival is 29 months with one prior line versus 25.8 with two or more prior lines of therapy. This is clearly showing that, as we were also seeing before in the forest plot, that even in a patient who already have two or more prior lines of therapy, the use of a second generation proteasome inhibitor of a new compound is clearly showing the efficacy independently from the number of prior lines used before. Another, we already saw it by numbers. Another important message is coming from the next slide on the differentiation of high risk versus standard risk patient. Once again, a major advantage with a reduced risk of progression of approximately 30%. The follow-up, and we can see in the next slide, is fairly short, not long enough, but certainly we can start to see an advantage in terms of median overall survival with a hazard ratio of 0.79 and a p-value of 0.01. So clearly, even in terms of overall survival, even if the follow-up is not probably mature, in fact, the curve are not reaching the median at present, there is already a significant trend in terms of improved overall survival for the combination, including carfilzomib, lenalidomide, and dexamethasone. Now, a few practical issues. We already mentioned that in terms of dosing, we need to start at the dose of 20 milligrams for only the first two infusion, then we move to 27 from subsequent infusion, usually with a twice weekly schedule. Something very important to highlight in terms of safety for this compound is that in terms of hematologic toxicity, is very well tolerated. One of the major advantages of carfilzomib that is not adding hematologic toxicity over the free drug combination. And you can clearly see from this slide that the anemia was grade 3 or 4, was 17% for KRD versus 17% for RD. Neutropenia was 29% for KRD versus 26% for RD. Thrombocytopenia, that is to some extent one of the major limitations of bortezomib, is in terms of hematologic toxicity, is 16 versus 12%. So you can see here that the addition of the third agent is basically not increasing the hematologic toxicity of the combination. And this is very important in the relapse refractory patient because these are the patients who start to have some kind of thrombocytopenia where the hemopoiesis is reduced by previous chemotherapy. So the use of a combination that is not significantly increasing the hematologic toxicity is quite important. In the next slide, We also highlight some of the non-hematologic adverse event, and basically you can see here the difference in terms of grade 3 or 4 non-hematologic toxicity are very limited with the usual difference in terms of infections. And you can see here that diarrhea is 3 versus 4, fatigue is 7 versus 6, upper respiratory infection is 2 versus 1. So you don't see major non-hematologic side effect. I think it's important to highlight something and we see in the next slide that is related to the adverse event of major interest. Where is the difference and what we should pay some attention? First of all, peripheral neuropathy. This is another major advantage in comparison to bortezomib. There is certainly the risk of peripheral neuropathy is identical to RD. Peripheral neuropathy all grades is 17% in KRD versus 70% in RD. The peripheral neuropathy grade 3 or 4 is 2-3% in KRD versus 3% in RD. So peripheral neuropathy and thrombocytopenia, if you want, are some of the two conditions where you have a selective indication for this compound, beside the opportunity to have a 30% CR rate that up today was unprecedented in relapse refractory patients. So, on the other hand, what we should probably pay more attention is hypertension. Then you can see here is 14% versus 7. And this is something to take care during the infusion. I would certainly check the blood pressure before the start of the infusion. And then also 10 minutes after the end of the infusion, and then probably 1 or 2 hours after the end of the infusion. Because some of these patients may develop hypertension, and this is lasting only 1 or 2 days, but we have to look at this potential risk factor, because this is probably one of the best way to avoid and eventually predict some cardiac side effects. In terms of cardiac failure, there is a difference, but once again, is minimal, from 3.8% for KRD versus 1.8% of RD. Deep vein thrombosis is once again very limited, 1.8 versus 1. And also in terms of pulmonary embolism, 3.1 versus 2.3, there is certainly no signal in terms of major increase in terms of deep vein thrombosis or pulmonary embolism. Also, in terms of second primary malignancy, the numbers are totally identical to RD, so there is no major increase in terms of second primary malignancy. Here, my message is mainly related during the infusion to check the blood pressure to avoid some hypertension that combined with dexamethasone might create the basis for some cardiac failure. Another very important message is quality of life. As you can see here, the difference in terms of quality of life is quite relevant. We do not always see this type of graphs in terms of quality of life. And as you can see, as I was saying before, how the drug is quick in terms of tumor reduction, and this translates immediately in a major difference in terms of quality of life, and this is sustained from cycle 3 through cycle 18. And this is something, you know, not always that evident in many other studies. Now, one of the issues is we certainly have another opportunity. And the other opportunity is, of course, the combination of bortezomib, usually given at 21-day cycles with infusion of 1.3 milligram square meter day 1, 4, 8, 11, with lenalidomide always at the dose of 25 milligram per day, day 1, 14. And dexamethasone at the dose of 20 milligrams, 1, 2, 4, 5, 8, 9, 11, 12. So this is the typical dose of VRD. And how can we differentiate one from the other? Certainly, carfilzomib might represent an improvement. The rate of CR is certainly increased. There is no risk of peripheral neuropathy. There is a slight increase in terms of cardiac events. So you can here already differentiate from the two, probably. Bortezomib could be considered to some extent the first choice, and carfilzomib the next re-challenge in terms of proteasome inhibitor infusion. These are some data coming from a study recently presented at ASH by the SWOG, and you can see here the difference. We are even talking about a VRD with a 15% CR rate in newly diagnosed patient, not relapse refractory, versus 8% of RD, and a VGPR rate of 30% versus 23% in the RD group. We are always talking about newly diagnosed patient did translate in a major improvement in terms of progression-free survival of median of 43 versus 30 months, but certainly the curve are relevant with a hazard ratio similar of 0.7, and important, also an improvement in terms of overall survival. So these are the two major regimens, certainly a combination including always a proteasome inhibitor and an IMID, and carfilzomib, once again, with a higher CR rate than bortezomib, less peripheral neuropathy, and some signal in terms of cardiac side effect, and probably the best possible rechallenge after bortezomib infusion. Now, something that I think is important and is always important to remember, because here we might start to discuss on doses and how to approach. More and more we are facing patients over the age of 75. More and more we are facing patients that are not only old, but they are also having some comorbidities. So what is important is to evaluate first and put together age and comorbidity. The first message is age is a condition of frailty over the age of 80, not over the age of 75. Is someone without any comorbidity is fit up to the age of 80, and becomes frail after the age of 80. Of course, someone becomes frail in younger ages if comorbidities are present. So these are the two major concepts to remember. 80 years as cut off in terms of age, presence of comorbidities, major comorbidities that can be defined by the Charson score when even in younger patient, even in a 60 years old patient. On top of that, also evaluate two issues. One, usually saying through ADL and IADL, the brain and the leg condition that are basically how much someone is mentally independent and how much someone is physically independent and therefore does not need any help in this respect. How can we manage this condition? We can manage this condition in two different ways, I would say. One way is moving from a free drug combination to a two drug combination. But the other way is also to use a free drug combination at the lower doses. So we should also always take in consideration those two options. And certainly option number one is very simple. We move from a free drug to the two drug combination. And option number two, and we can see it in the next slide, is certainly to reduce the doses. And we have something to keep in consideration. The dose of lenalidomide can be reduced from 25 to 15 milligrams. Remember that many patients, 50% of patients over the age of 70 might have a creatinine clearance around 50, and we are already in a dose range of 15 milligrams. Certainly bortezomib should be reduced from twice weekly to the weekly infusion. This is something probably very much suggested in a patient with age over 65 and without a major need of a quick tumor reduction. And also carfilzomib could be reduced to 20 milligrams, and this to some extent might represent something to take in consideration. So always remember that we might face those two conditions, the fit and the frail, and the frail need some more caution in the treatment schedule. Here are some studies showing the difference in randomized studies between two and three drugs, and you can see here then basically there is no major difference between the two and three drugs in elderly population with a significant proportion of patients having concomitant comorbidities. One issue that is not always followed but could be considered. And when we are in a gray zone between fit and frail, we are not sure that we might tolerate it exactly what we are delivering. We might start with two drug combination. And after two to three courses, to go from induction to consolidation, adding the third agent. Doesn't matter what we might add, but what I think is important is to start at a lower dose, with a lower dose intensity, have a couple of cycles, make sure that that patient can tolerate it, what we are delivering, and then move in a consolidation state, adding the third agent. I think this is also important because that's what we do basically with induction and transplantation. We start with a lower dose intensity and then we consolidate. Also important to remember that probably for maintenance is relevant to reduce the dose to be able to keep this treatment for a prolonged period of time. To close in the next slide to see what is changing today, So basically, we have the treatment schema for our patient. It's probably certainly the combination of proteasome inhibitor plus IMiDs plus transplant in the so-called young patient. The same combination without transplant in the elderly fit patient. And the two-drug combination for the frail elderly. Now will become probably more complicated how to use it in the future in the relapse refractory setting. And to make a complicated issue very simple, we do have the second generation proteasome inhibitor, carfilzomib intravenously and ixazomib oral. So when we want to use once again a combination IMiD proteasome, these are the two choice. But also we do have the availability of the monoclonal antibodies, daratumumab and enotuzumab, and once again, this might represent another choice in case we do not want to use a combination proteasome inhibitor and IMiD. And the other issue we should also take in consideration is in the moment, as that we move from bortezomib to carfilzomib, we move from lenalidomide to pomalidomide. So when we have been already using lenalidomide, that's in the next therapeutic sequence, we want to introduce pomalidomide as a third generation IMiDs after we have been using lenalidomide. So at this point, thank you for viewing this activity. For additional resourcing regarding integrating regimens into relapse refractory multiple myeloma management, please view the regimen protocol tool on managingmyeloma.com. Thank you very much for the attention.